Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio. This is your host, Jim Masters. Pleasure to have you here. Also a pleasure to have Robert Cutten joining us. He is an elevator and escalator expert extraordinaire. This is part one of an exclusive two-part series that we're doing. As a premier elevator and escalator expert and consultant, as well as expert witness for litigation involving elevator, escalator failures, and or accidents, his consulting work mainly focuses on faulty equipment that causes injuries or damage due to things like floods or fire. In the area of failure analysis, there is a forensic focus on electrical and mechanical failures of elevator and escalator systems. This includes high-rise buildings, high-speed multiple elevator groups, commercial and residential buildings, shopping malls, airports, transit agencies, and even hospitals. As an expert witness, Robert can be called upon either for the plaintiff's or the defendant's side to review evidence, inspect the equipment, and also determine the root cause of accidents or malfunctions, and actually give his factual opinion in court. Robert has been deposed over 80 times and has testified in at least 8 jury trials, all as an expert. He hopes to continue to spread awareness that more of us need to realize how elevators, although not foolproof, are not something to fear. And nowadays, they comply with safety codes, laws, and they're routinely expected and properly maintained so that we have even more reassurance of their safety and their reliability. Robert has over 40 years of experience working in the industry and is also the owner of an elevator company in the San Francisco Bay Area. He's performed over 1,000 inspections in numerous states and is sought after as an elevator and expert extraordinaire, truly. Don't miss, of course, this episode, but the second episode as well, because this is a two-part series that we're kicking off today here on Close Up Radio. It's going to inspire you with his professional expertise. During the course of the conversation, we'll be discussing interesting cases and also be sharing his own journey to success. Without further ado, from San Rafael, California, in the San Francisco area, let's welcome our very special guest, elevator and escalator expert Robert Cutten, joining us here today. Robert, joining us on Close Up Radio, and we thank you for that.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, the pleasure is all ours. We are very excited to talk about the incredible work that you do. What, you know, tell us about, I'd like to go back a little bit in time and sort of humanize our guests. What is it about this particular work that inspired you? How were you introduced to it? And were you always a kid like me that ran up and down the escalators in the department stores and never wanted to get off them, and your mother had to call you over and say, okay, look, Jimmy, we're leaving, we've got to go, and you're still going up and down and fascinated by the escalator as a kid?
Well, actually, quite the opposite. As a little kid, escalators were a little intimidating to me. I wasn't really comfortable getting on and off them, and it was just kind of strange. Although, as a kid, you know, going through high school mainly, beginning of high school, late junior high, by necessity, wanting to have a little freedom and getting around town and doing what I want to do with my friends, cars became something important. And this, of course, is in the early middle 70s. So we started working on cars, my parents' cars, my friends' cars. And when I got my permit and license, then I was able to get a car. So I became what they call in high school one of the motorheads, kids who were pretty handy around cars and working on the neighborhood cars and so forth. And how that opened up the elevator industry slowly was a neighbor across the street, Mr. Randall, managed a small independent elevator company in San Francisco called Atlas Elevator Company. It had been around since the 20s or something like that. And they had a fleet of vehicles. And my older brother had worked a summer there on a college break doing deliveries and running around the shop and such. And they had all these vehicles that needed attention, and I had just wanted to take a break in high school, my junior year, end of junior year, working at a gas station. You know, they did tune-ups and the auto repairs and such, so kind of wanted to take a break and enjoy my senior year of high school. And then I got connected. There was an opportunity at that elevator company to get these vehicles working for the company. You know, they have technicians who run all over the Bay Area taking trouble calls and doing repairs and so forth, a fleet of probably 20 vehicles, and probably, you know, 6 or 8 or 10 of them were in pretty bad shape, needed, you know, one needed an engine and tune-ups and brakes, whatever. So I would go to school, my senior year of high school, and, you know, do my classes, and then as soon as I got out of school, I would drive to San Francisco and then work on the cars and keep them running, and kind of it morphed into becoming the all-around shop kid, doing deliveries, picking things up and dropping them off for the elevator techs all over town. And it really gave me an insight into the inner workings of how an elevator company operates, you know, from the inside out, and where vendors are and so forth. So it became pretty cool. I really enjoyed it, you know, being wearing different hats at the company and being handy and running around and learning about San Francisco, where I was born, you know, different suppliers and so forth. And the elevator group is a wonderful group of people that are, you know, it's kind of a tight-knit group. It's a important trade where safety is number one. You know, you can get injured. It can be a potentially dangerous job. So there's a really deep camaraderie. And that was really a great thing for me going through senior year high school, having all this experience, and it looks like a career may be brewing, you know. Some of my friends were going off to college. I was attending night school, but I just really enjoyed this whole affair of all this activity and interesting things. And as having that experience, you know, where to get materials and suppliers and all this sort of thing, and knowing San Francisco, when the opportunity arose for me to get into the elevator union, the International Union of Elevator Constructors, I was pretty knowledgeable about where to get things and that aspect of it. So as a mechanic's helper, you know, I go out on a job with a mechanic and we're fixing XYZ on an elevator someplace in San Francisco. And the mechanic would say, oh man, we need to get this widget. Oh, I don't know what to do. I got to call the shop and get one. And I would say, well, sorry. Hey, Joe, down the street, there's three vendors that have that. I know the guys. We can get one, man. But let's go. Boom, boom, boom. So I kind of knew where to get all the parts. And that really was an asset to being a helper, a mechanic's, you know, an apprentice. So with that mixture of knowing where the parts are and so forth, and then actually getting my hands on the equipment with these mechanics and the willingness for them to train me and my willingness to learn, it was a really, really good thing. And I really, really enjoyed it and started to see the equipment from a different aspect. You know, here's this, you know, truckload of parts I used to deliver, and now I can see where the parts fit into whatever the equipment is, escalator or elevator. So that's kind of how I got going. And I, you know, it was really, really fun. And then cars weren't that, I wasn't working on cars as much. I was, you know, doing the elevator stuff more and more.
Let's talk of it. It's a fascinating way that it led you to doing this work. Tell us about the elevator and escalator consulting work that you do, to give the audience an idea of the actual process, the work itself. Are companies, stores, retailers, corporations, do they bring you in? How does it all work?
A very good question. Thank you for asking. It kind of came in by accident. I knew an attorney, and he had just mentioned to me, you're an elevator guy, right? I said, yeah, I am. He says, well, I have a client, excuse me, who owns a building, and he thinks he's, you know, getting bad service from the elevator company. Can you look at these documents and blah, blah, blah. So that was kind of my first intro to it, and I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. So I kind of started to get my name out there a little bit as a consultant, you know, whatever avenues were available at that time. I wasn't, you know, hardcore about, you know, that was my life or death business or anything like that. It was just kind of a side thing. So I would get contacted by attorneys, insurance companies. One of the first entities I worked with was a company that did failure analysis. They'd be called in by insurance companies to check out a failure of whatever. You know, it could be all kinds of different things, and some of it involved elevators. So I was doing quite a bit of work for that company for a while and getting my name out there more and more and getting a resume. And then I just, you know, get contacted more and more. And like I said, I wasn't actively pursuing it. You know, it's a life or death thing for me to survive, but it was just kind of a side thing. And it got busier and busier, and I got more and more opportunities. And then my name would go out there to certain attorneys, for example, and San Francisco is kind of a small town. One attorney would call another attorney, hey, you know, we have an elevator case or an escalator case. And, oh, I got the guy for you. So my name would pop up, and that's been happening more and more and more. And I'm getting my name out there more. And like I said, it wasn't my main thing, but now it's becoming getting busier and busier. And with the years and years of experience I have that I can't even believe I've been in the trade that long, it's been, you know, a really good thing. I have a pretty deep background of this stuff. I've seen quite a bit. And, you know, not only being a consultant, you know, having the experience, but working on the elevators constantly keeps my fingers on the pulse, so to speak. So I know the industry, I know suppliers, and I know with, you know, all the contacts that I have, kind of what's going on in the industry. So I have a pretty good feel of what's happening. It isn't just I have knowledge about elevators and I know the codes and I'm going to do these inspections and make these assessments. It's I have hands-on experience in addition to that of repairing these things and, you know, bidding jobs and so forth. So I have a really in-depth knowledge of the inner workings of this from both sides.
That's terrific. That's great, and you have a real passion for it. You know, how can people who have a fear of elevators feel more assured that they're actually safer than most of us think that they are? It's funny, my mother, she doesn't love elevators. Maybe it goes back to childhood. The part, I'm good with them, but it's the part, I guess, not when it first takes off and goes up or down. It's, I guess, when it's coming to the stop, sort of sometimes that little bump, there's that little bump where it, I guess, connects or whatever. She'll always mention that. She'll wait for it and always mention that.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think the Hollywood movie industry has done elevators a justice because they show these crazy things that happen with elevators falling and blowing up and catching on fire or whatever, but that is not the case. Elevators, statistically, if you were to gather all the data of the number of people that ride elevators in the world, it's in the billions, and the accidents, it's like a handful, and those handful of accidents are for mostly people trying to climb out of the elevators and become injured. They might slip and fall down the hoistway if the elevator isn't positioned to the floor. But actual riding of an elevator, becoming injured, it's, you know, the percentage is 000 whatever. It's such a low number, it's negligible. And as a result of that, they are statistically the safest means of transportation. Walking down the street, riding a bike, flying in a jet plane, riding a bus, whatever, are not as safe as elevators. And particularly, I can speak to the United States. You know, there's national codes that need to be adhered to and design criteria taken into account when they build these things and install these things. So they're very, very safe. Yes, it's an inconvenience to get stuck in an elevator. You are not in any danger. You're not going to run out of air. Nothing's going to fall on you. Snakes aren't going to crawl out of the walls and bite you or anything like that. They're safe. But yes, from time to time, people get stuck, and it's an inconvenience. We want to get to a meeting. We want to go home or whatever. And yes, I get that some people are claustrophobic and don't like being in a tight space. But again, there's plenty of air. No one's going to hurt you. The elevator's not going to fall. You know, they're... Elevators can't free fall. There's so many safety devices to prevent that. And even if they did, like the cables were to break, which is nearly an impossibility, there's a separate device that's monitoring the speed of the elevator. And if it exceeds a certain speed, there are these big clamps that clamp onto the main guiding members of the elevator, and it comes to a stop. And those are tested with full load at full speed. So worst case scenario, that's what they're designed for. And over and above that, it isn't like the elevator has a capacity of 2,000 pounds, and if we put 2,200 pounds on it, it's going to break and fall. No, that's not the case. It might overload a motor or a sensor, but it's not going to break and fall. No way. It's nearly an impossibility. I don't know that I've heard of, you know, maybe two or three elevators that have fallen over the years, but it's, you know, but we're talking about really rare catastrophic failures, like in a hydraulic system. You've heard here and there, but it's only been like, you know, like I said, two or three that I've heard of in 40 years. So it's very, very rare.
Yeah, that's comforting for people to hear. You know, how have they also evolved over the years, both elevators and escalators? You mentioned some of the wonderful ways that they have. What are some other ways that they've sort of evolved?
No, it's a good question. The we'll start with elevators. In the old days, let's say 100 years ago, these engineers were designing things on paper, so they didn't have CAD-assisted, you know, computer-assisted, computer-aided design to engineer things. So they would calculate how thick something needed to be in terms of steel, and you know, they determine it and they draw it all on paper and those old blueprints and all that sort of stuff, and build it. And I've visited elevators. I maintain elevators, and I've, you know, inspected elevators that are nearly 100 years old that are running fine. And, you know, certain aspects of it might need upgrading, the door operators or these components that get used quite a bit. But the core of the elevator itself is rock solid. It's built like a train. It's just this, you know, these huge pieces of steel. So
yeah,
the evolution of elevators from there, as designs come into play and some of these larger companies, Otis was taken over by United Technologies, which is a, you know, gargantuan company that does aerospace. So they incorporated some of the designs from aerospace, and things weren't made as thick and huge anymore. And it wasn't that it was being compromised. It's that it was adequate, but it just wasn't as huge and thick and heavy. So less materials, and obviously with the aid of the advent of computers and that technology, solid-state technology, you know, now we're over the years, they were introducing, you know, solid-state circuit boards for certain aspects of the elevator, you know, run the doors or whatever. And they incorporated more and more and more to, you know, motor control and more sophisticated positioning of the elevator within the elevator shaft. There's a system that I'm really familiar with these days. It has essentially a barcode on a strip of metal, a thin strip of metal, that runs the entire length of the hoistway. So there's a camera, basically, that reads this barcode from bottom to top in the hoistway, and it records that information. So the elevator system knows where it is at all times within about 3/16 of an inch. You know, you have to do this process where it's called a learn. There's a lot of systems, but I'm just talking in generalities where you're engaging the system and it's going to do a learn. It learns the hoistway. So now the elevator knows where it is at all times. And the change from that technology to 30, 40, 50 years ago, it's night and day, because there used to have to be physical switches inside the elevator shaft in order for the elevator to know where it was as it would travel up and down the hoistway. So there was a lot more materials on the elevator itself and a lot more relays and technology in the controllers themselves to be able to interact with it. And now the systems, like the one I described, which is, there's a lot of them out there, it might be 10 or 15 wires from the elevator controller, that's the main brain up in the elevator equipment room, you know, 10 or 15 wires that go to the elevator, where in the old days, there'd be 40 or 50 wires and all these things to connect, and it's more complicated and sometimes harder to troubleshoot. You might have a wire that's broken or all these different devices, but with these newer systems, it's a lot more streamlined and a lot simpler. So there's just been, I'm just giving an overall, but over the years, there's been this the technology has been introduced to these systems, and it's really improved it. And, you know, there's been some challenges along the way, obviously, with computer systems. There was a company that went all in, let's go all solid state, and it was a bit much. There was a lot of problems. You know, these boards weren't as reliable, and it was just too much technology all at once. So some of the companies were smarter about introducing little pieces of it, you know, little sections of the elevator, if you will, to the computerized part. Another part that's really interesting and I've seen evolve is with respect to the motor control. So that's the motor that's driving the elevator. They've come up with a technology that has, you spoke, I think it was your mother, about how rough the elevator ride was and when it came to a stop and so forth. But the technology is such that there's a secondary device mounted on the motor. It's a miniature generator or encoder or whatever you want to call it, but it's producing pulses that this computer is reading as it rotates. And the computer is programmed to know a specific acceleration curve, amount of acceleration, and deceleration, so that it's coordinated and it's monitoring the pulses coming out of that encoder or tachometer. So the system knows to keep the elevator motor running at that predetermined curve, and it bases if it's going too fast or too slow, overloaded or light, based on the output of that little device I mentioned. So you really don't know. You can't feel the difference between a full elevator of 10 people or one person in the elevator because of this technology monitoring the speed of the motor on startup and slowdown. It can maintain this ideal acceleration and deceleration curve. So this is from, you know, looking back 50 years to that technology, it's absolutely night and day and a game changer. The old elevators, the elevator is approaching the floor, and maybe this is the kind of elevator your mother was riding, and it would give a signal to turn off the elevator, to stop it at the floor. And what would happen is it's going at a given speed, and it turns off. It says, okay, we're close to the floor, and the brake would grab the brake drum on the motor and stop the unit. Well, that's fine, and you set the tension of the brake and how much slide there is on the system, on the braking system when it's decelerating, based on an ideal amount of load. And that's going to change, obviously. So you set it up, let's say, for two people. It's coming in primo. It's level both directions. But then when it's empty and it's going up, the counterweight is heavier than the elevator. That ratio is heavier. So now it's harder to slow down because the counterweight, there's a greater imbalance. So it's not as accurate in both directions. And again, if the elevator is loaded up with eight people, whatever the capacity is, now the elevator is heavier than the counterweight, so it's going to be going a little bit slower. So the floor level accuracy is not really there. It's kind of arbitrary. It's just based on how that braking system is stopping the elevator, whereas the one I described, the high-tech one, the brake really comes into play after the elevator comes to a stop electrically, and it's holding the elevator at the floor versus stopping it on the brake. So it's a completely different set of technology and a different riding experience, really, and the maintenance experience. It's a lot easier to maintain these higher tech ones that level in a lot smoother versus the older ones that slide to a stop.
Big difference, yeah. And that is a terrific improvement for the rider overall, the experience of the elevator. What are some of the things that you think distinguish you from others that might do similar work?
Good question. Like I mentioned, most of the consultants I know did have some time in the trade, although they didn't spend as many years hands-on. Most of them did not spend as many years hands-on doing the variety of repairs and experiences that I've had. I'm not, you know, patting myself on the back or anything. I'm better than anyone else. It's just this hands-on experience. I think I have a lot more hands-on experience, and I was really lucky to work for some really good elevator companies with great bosses who kind of, it's like parents letting you, you know, go ahead, go on, have fun, do what you want to do as long as you're responsible. My bosses were kind of the same way. Can you handle this repair job? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, let's go. I need this and this widget and this hoist and this tools, and we would do it, and things were great, and the boss would give me more leeway next time. So I've had some experiences with some pretty challenging situations, and it's kind of fun sometimes to go on an inspection and, you know, there's a flood or a fire or some failure, and I'm there with the elevator company who maintains the building. I'm there on behalf of the insurance company who's going to be paying for that claim. And the elevator company say, oh, well, 1, 2, 3, 4, those are all broken, and we, you know, you got to change them. And I go, well, you know what? 1 and 2 are broken, but not 3 and 4. Look, they're fine. They didn't get wet. They didn't get burned. They're fine. Well, yeah, I guess you're right. So there's a little bit of debating and arm twisting back and forth. But in reality, you know, you want to fix the elevator to where it was before it was damaged. But it's just the hands-on experience. I know it. I've been there, done that. So it's really helpful, and I feel that I have a pretty good knowledge about that, and that having that hands-on experience really helps.
That's incredible. That's really, really fantastic for people to realize. What are some of the reasons that an elevator can malfunction?
Good question. There's a litany of things. There's so many sensors and so much going on for the elevator to run. The doors have to close. Not only they have to close mechanically, but there's an electrical signal associated with it. Then, you know, the physicality of closing the doors, there's a door operator, and there's sensors on it. There's signals going to it to tell it to close. Once everything's closed, it's telling the system, okay, now we can start. Let's go when we run up or run down, whatever. So there's a lot of things happening. I call it a symphony of things that all have to go correctly. And in most cases, they do. Like I said, they're pretty reliable. However, there's things that can damage it, you know. Things that don't help are when people are kicking or pushing on the doors or putting the buttons too hard or too often. Things wear out. Like, you know, in your car, the brakes wear out and, you know, widgets wear out. All kinds of things wear out. So, you know, there's debris that gets in the system. You know, a relay or a mechanism can only operate so many times. And, you know, you don't think about how often a relay. For example, you know, there's door close relay, door open relay. These are signals that need to happen. And these relays, you know, they're designed for, you know, 500,000 operations or something like that. Well, after 20 years, it's probably going to get 500,000 operations, and it's going to wear out. And then it's going to interrupt the way the system is supposed to flow. So, you know, things like that. There's a lot of things. I can't say there's one thing that caused them to be unreliable, but there's a lot of things happening at once. That need to be, you know,
yeah,
that need to happen to be right.
Exactly right. We're just about wrapped up with this episode, but next week I think we can delve into talking about some of the safety devices that have been produced most recently, a great deal that you've already mentioned, but then we can slide into the work as an expert witness, which is something really fascinating that you do that I think we can definitely elaborate on the next episode. Our very special guest, Robert Cotton, will be with us next week. That is July 18th, also at 10 a.m. Eastern time. So look for that. Robert, thanks so much for sharing this with us. Really fascinating work that you do, extraordinary work, and very important work that you do. And appreciate your stopping by the show today, and hope you enjoy the time with me as much as I have with you, Robert.
I did. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed it.
You're very, very welcome. And keep up the amazing work, of course, and more next week here on Close Up Radio. We really appreciate Robert's time. His email is elevatorexpert@gmail.com. All right. For all of us here, thanks for joining us. Jim Masters, have a terrific day, and stay tuned. I'll be back in less than 30 minutes with another incredible expert here on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.